Gerald Vision is Professor of Philosophy at Temple University. He's the author of Veritas, The Correspondence Theory and Its Critics, and Reemergence, Locating Conscious Properties in a Material World. In this interview and discussion, he addresses the favourable attributes of the correspondence theory of truth and discusses the problems found in a pragmatist version of truth, and outlines why one of the most fundamental considerations regarding the concept of truth is not how, why, or that it works, but why we are interested in the very concept of truth itself. Truth obviously is an essential concept in any form. Historically, throughout philosophy, it's been a contentious issue. What's a general overview from your perspective of truth in philosophy, whether it's from the analytic or the continental tradition?
Well, of course, anyone interested in truth can be asking a lot of different questions. They can be asking, what is true? They can be asking about significant truths and so forth. But the sort of inquiry that I've been interested in and the sort of work that I've been doing has to do with the question of what truth actually is. Not which things are true, so to speak, and all that, but what it means for something to be true. And if I had to start from someplace and so forth, although it precedes Aristotle, I mean, Aristotle simply said, and I take it that this is a sort of standard and some people call a very boring story about truth, is that Aristotle said, translated into English, that to say of what isn't that it is, and of what is that it isn't, is the false. To say of what is that it is, and of what isn't that it isn't, is the true. And I take that to be a very simple primordial notion of correspondence theory. There is something that we say, I would add something that we believe, and so forth, and it either fits the world or it doesn't fit the world. Now, that's been attacked from various sources. I suppose the first source of attack has been what is called the coherence theory of truth. And the best way to explain the coherence theory, it's very difficult to explain what exactly the bearers of truth are supposed to be on a coherence theory. Let me just say that they're a body of beliefs. And the coherence theory comes in various forms. It can come in a very strict form that says that truth is the kind of coherence that the body of beliefs have, make them true. And the truth will actually be, in the very strictest form and so forth, that every belief in that body entails every other belief. The less strict, more common form and so forth holds that the beliefs in this body, not necessarily every belief, but beliefs in this body and so forth, cohere with one another in the sense that they serve as evidence for one another. And so a belief is true if other beliefs in that body and so forth offer evidence for that. A third view that probably came into circulation in the 1860s with Charles Sanders Peirce, the view that belief is true if it works. Now, of course, working has to be cut down, and so it's not working in any which way whatsoever, but working in a kind of epistemological or scientific way.
A general pragmatist view here.
Yes, general pragmatism, right? And at the end of the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th century, a fourth sort of view sort of entered the arena, and I call this a deflationary theory of truth. And the view there is that something, whatever the bearer is, a sentence, a proposition, a belief, a statement, an assertion, to say that it's true is simply, well, to say that P, take P as our, unfortunately, our the technical term we use in philosophy and so forth for any proposition or any statement whatsoever, P is true if and only if P. So to say that snow is white is true is simply to say snow is white. Those are the main competitors in the field.
I know today the correspondence theory of truth that you were alluding to there initially is it's quite a popular view, especially amongst realist philosophers. The coherence theory of truth also ties into that a bit, can be slightly more problematic. What do you think about the contemporary pluralist vision of truth, that there isn't one universal general truth, but many different truths in different discourses from philosophy of mathematics, philosophy of science, and philosophy of language? How do you feel about this?
Well, the approach I take is rather different. Well, without disclosing too much and so forth, suppose I start with a correspondence theory. I think in the simplest sort of case, you have to start with correspondence. But here's the occupational hazard for all philosophy whatsoever, and that is that philosophers try to sum up everything that's happened in one simple formula. But the fact of the matter is that language changes. Truth has an evaluative aspect. Therefore, people are going to want to say that things are true as a matter of evaluation. So the word truth is going to proliferate to all sorts of discourse. Now, I think that it works off of a core, and the core is going to be correspondence in this particular case. But I have absolutely no problem with the fact that there are going to be secondary, tertiary cases of truth that are going to work off of that. On the other hand, you could start with a kind of plurality and simply say, well, look, here's a big grab bag, and there's this sort of truth and that sort of truth, and they're on a par with one another. But to me, that's a little like saying, well, I want to find out what a human is. So I'll start with standard cases of humans. But then I'll go on to cases of humans that have 12 fingers instead of 10 fingers, or two heads instead of one head, and so on. You could say, well, look, there's simply a plurality of things that count as human, and they're all on a par with one another. Well, that doesn't strike me as a very good way to try to find out what it is biologically and so forth to be a human, is to take all the cases and put them on sort of one table and simply spread them out. And I think that is a problem with the pluralist theory of truth. I think it works better if you're a deflationist than on any other theory of truth.
So you're happy to entertain a possibility that we can have one universal aspect of truth with secondary and tertiary aspects, like subgroups of branches coming from that truth?
Yes, certainly. I mean, it used to be the case historically, and by historically, I mean just going back to the beginning of the 20th century, really. There were all sorts of questions about whether there could be truth in mathematics, whether there could be truth in ethics and value theory, and so on. But those were handled in a very different sort of way. They were handled as follows. Let's just choose arbitrarily one sort of truth bearer statements. Statements could be true or false, or propositions could be true or false. The question in those other cases is whether indeed those were propositions or statements in mathematics or in ethics. When I say that something is good, it looks like a declarative sentence. And declarative sentences are the model. Declarative subject predicate sentences are the model for simple theories of truth. But of course, those who held that they couldn't be true, or those who held that there was something different about them, would say, well, no, they're not really statements or propositions. There's something else. But you can't just deny that they're statements or propositions. You have to say, in addition to the fact that they're not statements or propositions, what they are. Well, they're disguised wishes, or they're disguised commands or imperatives. That is to say that something is good is to say do that thing, really. It was handled in that way. Nowadays, it's not handled that way. All of these things are called sentences or propositions, and then the problem becomes: well, then, what are we going to do when we say that they're true? So the problem has sort of changed its center, changed its focus because of that.
Just backing up on two points there. So correspondence theory of truth, which is perhaps in everyday empirical experience slightly easier to understand for everyone pragmatically, that is that a statement is either true or false, or a belief is either true or false, if it corresponds to a certain perhaps objective fact in the world, which most people can clearly understand. So right now in your time zone it's 2 o'clock, in mine it's 7 o'clock. That corresponds to an aspect of truth. Now the coherence version of truth, which is one aspect of it, is taking a composition of different beliefs and thought, and then coherently together that can point to some aspect of truth. Doesn't that become more problematic because it goes slightly beyond the correspondence theory of truth, because you can put a statement, beliefs and facts together and spin it in a way that can present a different version of truth to someone else, even though you're dealing with the same facts? So as a very simple example here, I would say it's generally an atheist and a theist clearly lives in the same contemporary scientific world, yet their coherent system of what constitutes truth is as opposed as it could be. Isn't that problematic in generally getting at truth?
Oh, yes, of course it's problematic. Disagreement itself doesn't bother me, because it's going to be any theory of truth that doesn't leave room for disagreement is going to be a non-starter, I think. But yes, there are all sorts of problems with coherent theory of truth. Take a body of beliefs. Well, take, for example, a very well-written 1,000-page novel. The sentences in that novel cohere with one another. But so you want to be able to distinguish between a very well-written novel. I mean, most novels, of course, can't remain that consistent and so forth. Well, for example, in Sherlock Holmes stories, Dr. Watson's wound changes from one story to the other. The location of the wound changes from one story to the other. And in Proust, a spoon turns into a fork later on. But suppose that the novel is so well-written that everything in it coheres. Well, you still want to distinguish between that and what's happening outside the novel, and a coherence theory has difficulty doing that.
Okay, so you've alluded to some of the different versions of truth, some aspects of why some of them work and some problematic ones. Just to get two ends of the spectrum, what is your best theory of truth? I think you may have alluded to a deflationist or correspondence theory of truth, but if you can just sum that up again. And what is the worst one in your opinion?
Yes. Well, of course, because I hold a version of the correspondence, not every version of the correspondence theory of truth is going to be very good. Because I hold a version of the correspondence theory of truth, I think all the rest of them are faulty. But if I had to choose one that was, the worst of the lot, I would have to say it was pragmatism. The reason I say that is simply that it just doesn't go far enough. Okay, truth is what works. Okay, it is what works. Some of the time it works, some of the time it doesn't. Bertrand Russell has sort of a case where he receives a letter saying that a very wealthy aunt of his denied, and he has to come and get his inheritance. And so he jumps on a train, meets a very beautiful, wealthy widow. The letter turns out to be wrong, but he marries the widow. And so in some sense, the letter worked for him, even though the information in it was false. But the reason that I think that that pragmatism is probably the worst is it just doesn't go far enough. Okay, suppose truth works. Most of the time, indeed, it does. But we want to know why it works. And what the pragmatist does is the pragmatist cuts off the discussion at that point. But I think there is this further question. I think it's a legitimate question. Why does it work? And so, you know, I'll choose pragmatism as my bad guy just for that reason. I don't think deflationary theories are much better, frankly. But
in one defense of pragmatism, couldn't it be said though, clearly it isn't enough to say that truth is something that works pragmatically, because obviously that takes truth away from almost an essential objective concept to being something that's far more convenient, so to speak, which I agree is it doesn't go far enough. But I think in light of some of the original pragmatist views from James and so forth now that we've got in science, I think isn't it a good thing to be said in favour of pragmatism that although we can never get some kind of underlying scientific truth per se, this is really within realism and anti-realism in philosophy of science, that we can never get a truth. Clearly there's a difference in the truth of gravity between someone like Newton and Einstein, but we can at least accept truth in its own kind of context, and in that respect it pragmatically works. Isn't that a valid way to at least presume? You see it in theoretical physics and cosmology.
Yes, you're quite right. As I said at the outset and so forth, there are lots of different questions you can ask about truth, and that answers one of the questions. It answers the question about why we're interested in truth, why we seek truth, and so forth, because it works better than falsehood for the most part, Russell's case notwithstanding, right? So yes, it does answer a question. My objection to it is only when it poses itself as a theory of why the proposition or sentence or belief is true. And there it just doesn't seem to go far enough. There it just stops with saying, well, it works. And I'm not sure that that's why it's true. In fact, I'm pretty sure that's not why it's true. That's rather why we pursue it.
The why behind this, why did we accept some version of truth as opposed to another? That's a very good point. Now, going forward, you at the outset listed the four different versions of truth that are currently occupy philosophy to the present day historically. Do you see any of these aspects changing in the near future? By that I mean as far as forward as you can project. Obviously I know you haven't got a crystal ball.
Right. No, I don't. Actually, I mean there are other things that I could have mentioned. For example, I mean there's the Heideggerian notion that it's kind of disclosure. And I didn't mention that. Well, I mean, we could talk about it, but I didn't mention it because I didn't think you could go very far with it. I think the last, I mean, I very difficult to talk about the future, but I think that the and because this is all going to be sort of a priori, there is not going to be a kind of scientific discovery. Yes, indeed, propositions correspond to a fact in the world. There's no scientific project that's going to discover that. The best philosophers can do is kind of elaborate on that in various ways. I think that John Austin, did a pretty fair job of elaborating on it. The last innovation, I think, was probably deflationary theories, that to say that P is true, to say snow is white is true, simply to say snow is white. And but I don't think that you can get much mileage from that, and I think that there's a lot wrong with it as well.
Okay, thank you, Jared. Just before I let you go and ask you about your own current research interests, just to pick up on the point that you said about Heidegger. Now, generally, in the continental tradition, it's slightly different in terms of the pure humanities as opposed to the traditional analytic thought that's occupied English speaking world for a long time in terms of causation, explanation, truth, and this kind of stuff. Is it? Would it be an over-clued statement to say that aspects of Heidegger's disclosure, then Foucault and discourses, and to a certain extent Derrida and deconstructions, and that it's almost not worth spending a lot of time in that in terms of an objective value of truth, because clearly a lot of the mission behind that work is pure subjectivity in the humanities anyway. Is that a fair assessment on it? I wouldn't think that someone like you pays a lot of attention to a Derrida or a Heidegger version of truth, because it's clearly subjective.
Yes. Well, the fact of the matter is, whether it, for me, no, it doesn't pay to spend too much time on it. But after being among philosophers for a number of years and so forth, different people get inspiration from different sorts of things. The trouble, for example, with Heidegger is not that everything that he says is untrue, but that it's sort of all over the map. I mean, I think he conflates all sorts of things. Now, of course, if you pay attention to certain passages, some of the same things that I've been saying would have been said by Heidegger. If you pay attention to other passages, it just looks like he's going off the rails. So I wouldn't say people shouldn't read him for inspiration. They shouldn't read, you know. Well, there are certain things I don't think that they should read for inspiration. For example, Ayn Rand. But no, I don't think that I would say that people should read him for inspiration. But I do think that there's so much unclarity in him and in Foucault that once you achieve a certain level of understanding of these issues, I just don't think they're much more help.
Okay, it also depends on, as you were saying earlier, why is it something constitutes a better version of truth than another? It depends what you want to get from the concept of truth. Would depend on whether you want to read someone like Heidegger or Peirce. So that's very interesting. Okay, thank you, Gerald. Just to wrap up, tell us, I know you were working on some anthologies and contributing to them. What are your current research interests right now?
Well, I mean, I have one. I have one project on truth, but it's essentially an historical project. It's to talk about the dust up between Austin and Peter Strawson on truth, and I'm contributing that to an anthology. But other stuff that I'm working on is it's only related to truth Indirectly. I'm working on causation. I'm working on theories of what are called theories of mind and so forth. I'm working on a theory called emergentism and so forth, which is a kind of deviation from general physicalist theories. And as far as causation is concerned, I'm rather attracted by something that's come out rather recently, contextualist theories of causation, and trying to work my way through that as well. So those are some of the things that I'm working on. I'm also still worried about truth and about how to fix up some of the problems that have been brought out about the formulation of correspondence theories. Of course, the word correspondence is a metaphor, just as coherence is a metaphor for coherence theorists. So you're not going to, by concentrating further on that word correspondence, find out more about what the correspondence theory of truth is. You want to know in what ways things correspond. Also, there are all sorts of problems with correspondence. If you simply say, well, a true proposition is a proposition that corresponds to the facts. What about negative propositions? That the cat is on the mat is fine. That the cat isn't on the mat, is that a fact? What fact is it? And what about general facts, such as there have been wars before? So there are all sorts of issues to work out about what the kind of correspondence we're talking about amounts to. And I'm still much worried about that.